world.
Those things. We're on the Headstuff Podcast.
Yep, we are.
This is episode 31.
31, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's been quite the journey.
It's far too much of us talking to each other. So much so.
I think it's not
so
enough.
So much so that we can't be in the same room anymore.
So we're doing this one over the phone because Connor refused to come up and have a chat with me. So
I'm not going all the way to Dublin just to talk to you.
Oh, come on. We always have good conversations. We always have to cut out an hour of it every week.
That's true.
So this is episode 31 with Michael Kinnearns, who is an Irish filmmaker. And he just worked on the film Strangerland, which he was a screenwriter. Strangerland is the film with Nicole Kidman and Agent Smith from The Matrix.
That's his real name.
Yeah, I think so. whose name I can't remember actually right now.
Hugo Weaving. Oh,
Hugo Weaving.
My God. Yep.
And Joseph Fiennes.
Yeah.
And it's set in Australia. And don't ever go to Australia is the message.
Yeah. That's basically the caption, is it? Underneath,
I think,
the movie,
so.
On the poster, yeah.
Yeah. Strangerland. If you go for a walk, you'll get lost in Australia. Yeah, but it's a good film. He's a screenwriter on it, so he didn't direct this, but he's also a director. And he's working on it. He's actually probably in, where did he say he was going? Greenland?
Greenland.
He says it in the episode. Yeah. He was going a few days after we recorded it, which
was very jealous
last week. Yeah, so hopefully his career is taking off in a way where he's like, you know, the next Lenny Abrahamson or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Well to, you know,
very nice guy. It was great talking to him.
See success happening to people like that in Ireland.
Yeah. Yeah, he was dead sound. Mm. And it seemed like he deserved it. Like, he works hard. He doesn't want anything else. And this is what he works at. And he seems to have his head screwed on in the right kind of way. So,
unlike us.
What are you talking about? 31 episodes. We're very prolific.
Yeah.
So it was fun. What did you learn anything from Mr. Kinnearns?
I did, but we recorded the episode last week, so I can't really remember that far back. I'll have to listen to it, and I'm sure
is that what happens when you learn something that
it pushes other
gone.
Stuff out of my head, and then when I relearn the other stuff, I forget what I just learned. So yeah. I think that's how the human brain works.
Yes, I believe so. Yeah.
Although that office, like, we recorded the episode in an office of some movie place.
Some filmmakers.
And it was a pretty sweet office. You need to upgrade your office up there.
It was slightly better than Headstuff HQ. But we'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah.
We'll have a glass table and lovely leather armchairs.
Yeah, it was very entourage.
Yeah, it was a nice place. Yeah. We definitely could have sat there all day, but we got swiftly kicked out. Because, you
that's,
know,
you're
we
done,
were,
get out.
Yeah. We were ruining the feng shui of the place.
We aren't pretty enough to be in here.
Yeah, well, yeah. Anyway, let's go into the episode, will we?
Okie doke.
Let's go into the episode, shall we? This is episode 31 of the Headstuff Podcast with Michael Kinnearns. Busy of you.
I have been busy. Well, you know, it's been a good last 12 months, I suppose, particularly. Yeah.
Right. When did the kind of Strangerland thing start happening for you?
It was, I suppose, the end of 2012.
Right.
2013. McDowell Keller, the producer, had I'd worked with Mac. He's been a friend for a long time, and he approached me with the project, basically saying he had this Australian project that he wanted to bring a writer on with, and something I was kind of familiar with from before he had talked to me about before. So basically that's how it came out. He had got the rights for this Australian project. And
right, okay. And how far along was the project when you
I suppose the situation was Mac had met Kim Ferrante, the director, in Berlin,
right,
film festival that year, and she had developed with an Australian writer, and they had got a script together, but it wasn't able to get the finance it needed in Australia, and it sort of had kind of got abandoned.
Okay.
But there was something really strong in the idea. And so at that stage she had been around for a few years, but it just, you know, it's kind of one of the realities of sometimes with these projects that they get so far, but they can't get over the line and they need a sort of fresh perspective or a different take completely on it. So there was definitely something really strong in the initial idea, and the Australian writer was kind of happy. She felt like she had taken it as far as she could go. So that's kind of how it landed on my sort of desk in a way.
So you brought some sort of secret sauce to it, or
secret sauce? That's
right. You dolloped that
my
on,
secret
did you?
Sauce. Yeah, yeah. Heavy metal Mullingar mayonnaise. Yeah. No, it was. I suppose I had a bit of an outsider perspective on it. There was, and I could.
Was everybody else was Australian? Were they?
Yeah.
Or was it just at this point? It was just the writer and director.
It was just the writer and director, and they had an Australian producer. But again, that all sort of had dissolved.
Okay.
And then it took Mac a bit of time to get the rights for it, I think, and then. And because I suppose Kim had been friends with Hugo Weaving, had been Hugo had been in a film for his before short, and he was kind of saying, "Listen, if you ever get, I'd be interested. You know, I'll always help out." So there was that kind of carrot all the time that you could get someone like Hugo involved, who's, you know, massive figure in Australian cinema. So so you could possibly get a. Yeah, you could build on that. So I think there was always this feeling of a carrot with the project that it was, if you get the script right, it could go, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So in terms of my involvement, then it was just about looking at it in terms of fulfilling it more as a mystery thriller and bringing more of a... I think there was a good setup and a good sort of situation with the family. It's the story's about these two kids who go missing and the family and... It was this dust storm and it was really evocative, but then it was about trying to look at it and how you can bring out more of a tension within that mystery thriller, how you build up the characters and make it work in that way.
Yeah, how do you kind of balance that? It is kind of a family story in a way, a terrible family story, but a family story. How do you kind of balance the building tension by you have to kind of withhold information. And you have to the characters kind of withholding information. So how do you kind of balance building that tension, but with also, you know, making the characters believable as well?
Yeah, it's tricky. I think it's finding ways to build believable characters and complex human beings is the hardest thing within film, I think, because it's not like you have like long-running TV series where you can build up over time or else. It's just, I think you have to go in at the right kind of point of attack, which is there's backstory that's dramatic and interesting secrets and interesting reveals, and there's tension within that family. So it's already to spill over. Yeah. And I think it's that if you get at the right moment, then it's already there, and it's just about withholding the information and drawing an audience in with those kind of dramatic questions of what's going on here, what are they going to do, all that sort of stuff that keeps you hooked in, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So like, at what point does the idea to start the film with the boy walking like arrive? Like,
I think it was basically this idea of giving a sense of an unease within this family. And that's what I wanted to try and do, try and create a sense of something was slightly wrong here.
Yeah.
And also, it was interesting to start off with Tom, because Tom is the little boy, is less the problem child of the family.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of, it's almost like, again, a bit of a red herring to what's going to happen later. So that's how you want to do. And also, it's a way into this world, because I think what's really interesting about Strangerland is the environment takes place in is quite exotic. It's that kind of outback town that it's right in the middle of the desert, and it's got all that kind of associations of Australian film, like, you know, Walkabout, and, you know, we shot in the same places, Priscilla Queen in the Desert and all that. So it's quite evocative of Australia and I think the land and all that sort of stuff, you know.
It's another film that I put in the category of reasons not to go to Australia.
That's a bit harsh.
Well, with the spiders and the whatever.
And like, just don't go for a walk. You're not coming back.
There's a whole lot of nope going on in Australia.
Did you go over there? Were you there?
We were there for about 2 months then, and all.
You were there for shooting.
So I went over. We had 3 weeks rehearsals, which was the amazing thing. I think that's really, really quite rare for film.
Right.
And it was something that Kim, the director, sort of insisted on. It was amazing for, you know, as a first time feature director, she was able to get that. And Mac and Naomi, the producers, did a great job for that. So I flew over sort of the week before rehearsals and then sat in with all the, and it was just me, Kim and the actors working really closely on the script, really interrogating everything. And I think that's a great help for me as a writing it from, you know, this structure and story and context and all that stuff, and you build characters, but getting that nuance of dialogue and stuff,
yeah.
Actors will always bring something really exciting and new that you'll never kind of get. Just that flow and colloquialisms and weird curse words and stuff like that. You wouldn't, you know, that I'd be taken from freaking Home and Away or something. So that was good.
They did.
Basically Alf Ramsey, whatever. Yeah. So now you try and avoid that. But that does, that really sort of brings that, sort of elevates it another notch. And it was just great. Then you work with these great actors and you see them working a close call, and it's an incredible experience.
At what point does Nicole Kidman become attached to it?
So Nicole, I think it was a situation, when I got the script, it was the female character was more, it was an outsider kind of foreign character.
Right.
I think they were looking at Juliette Binoche and things like that. That's what they were. But for me, the story is so integrally an Australian story. It's so, the layers are about, I suppose, at its deepest level, you know, it's a mystery thriller and it's working on that kind of level of what happened to these kids, and there's an investigation, and, you know, it's all about the secrets and lies that are going on within the family and within the community. But it's also about the nature of the anxiety of white settlers in this hostile landscape and the community that have been sort of persecuted beneath them, which is, you know, the Indigenous Aboriginal community. So there's all that layering beneath it. And so for me, it was all those characters. You know, she had to be Catherine, particularly had to be Australian.
Yeah.
So once that decision was made, then Nicole was able to come on board.
Yeah.
At what point do you know who you're writing for? Or does that make a difference to the... surely it would make a huge difference to the way you actually write.
In some ways, yeah. It does. I mean, it's rare. I mean, with this... Hugo was definitely always going to be cast, and then there was
was he always going to be that character?
I think originally they were thinking about him for the father probably, and then Guy Pearce was originally then going to was going to be come on board, and Guy was on board until just basically 2 months or a month before the shoot. He just had to drop out at the last minute. But generally, no, you don't. You're trying to write a character, and you might have in your mind who you'd ideally like. And this is such a rare experience of, you know, I suppose we all have those fantasy castings, like fantasy football kind of thing, you know, where who would you like, who you think, and then you hope you might get someday, you get these characters, these actors. But it happened in this one, they were able to get all really amazing A-list cast, you know. And I think they are all really committed to doing it. I think that's the beauty of. It's similar, I suppose, with Irish cinema, where you've got English language, high-level A-list cast. If they find the script that really speaks to them about their home country, they'll come back and do it, you know.
Or fly halfway across the world in the case of Joseph Fiennes.
Yeah. Well, it was great for... Yeah. Again, we were able to get him quite late on the process, and he slotted in great. Yeah, he's a great guy.
He was good, yeah.
Yeah, and so I live down in Baltimore, down in West Cork at the moment. He grew up in West Cork, so it was kind of that was an easy kind of way in for us. He's a really good guy, really, really no airs or graces, you know.
And they clearly, having a cast like that clearly brings a lot to a film. How much did it was it kind of a relief for you? Because the other way, it's you're starting the film from this point of tension. You know there's a bit of a problem, you don't know really what it is. You know, the boy walks and there's a problem with the daughter. How much was it, I suppose, a weight off you when you saw Nicole Kidman first on screen and she's like, she's brilliant, and straight away you can tell that something's not right and that she's not comfortable, you know?
Yeah, well, I think the thing with Nicole came on, we had 3 weeks rehearsal, and then she came on for the last week because she'd run over on, she was doing Werner Herzog movies before that.
All right.
So that had gone a bit late, so she came a bit later for us. So, but she had done a lot of work with Kim beforehand because she was on board for quite a long time now at that stage, about, you know, a good 6-9 months before that. So they had met and talked everything through. And in rehearsals, she's just very, you know, it's just talk everything through, very pared back, and she's really, really cool. And then on the first day of shoot, it was quite an intense scene of just after the dust storm, and they're in that first interview in the police station.
Oh, yeah.
And it's amazing. You're just watching the monitor and just like, she is that person. She is Catherine. It's so incredible to see how someone is able to bring just inhabit a role so quickly, and that's why these are great actors. That's why they are the top,
because
they have this, just, it's like thoroughbred horses or something, you know, they're just on, and you're just sucked into the screen. It's a really, really sort of quite a surreal experience, you know, when you see someone who you recognize, you know their face, you know that, you know, we know these people even though we don't know them at all, and then you meet them and you're kind of like, okay, great, you're a normal human being and all the rest, and then you see them on screen again, and you're like, wow, and you're watching the person in real life. And then you're looking at the monitor and you watch it, and you're just going, that it's just an incredible thing to watch. You know, they just have this real gift, you know.
So being a writer, writing for someone like that, or having someone like that taking your role, must be just like,
it's a bit surreal. Yeah. You know, I wrote, you know, I was living in Ormond Quay in Dublin at the time, and you know, a little kind of garret up the top of an apartment, and you're writing these lines, and then you hear this person speak to them. It's a very strange experience.
Yeah,
but what I think she does is, all great actors do, is they're able to bring this internal world, and you see into their internal really, really easily, and you don't need to load on dialogue. You don't need to, it's all done with very, and that's the kind of cinema I love, is kind of stuff I'd love to, you know, I aspire to write, is pulling back all the time, you know.
Just subtlety and
it's difficult sometimes on the page, it looks like nothing's happening, but you have to trust that
you need the right actor or actress to do it. Yeah,
it just can bring so much emotion, you know.
Yeah.
And are rewrites happening throughout rehearsal? Like, does...
Yeah, constantly, in terms of, the script is never finished, in terms of you're constantly, I'm always open to that.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, it's a fluid thing. You're constantly, you hope you're not making massive decisions on plot and structure at that point. You're just hoping you're nuancing, tightening up scenes, looking at that stage, you're also looking at what's, you know, you know that your time and money are, you know, not in your favor. So you're going to have to cut as much as possible to just get down to the meat and drink of everything. So there's, you know, because in the end of the day, if you know something's probably not going to make the cut anyways, don't even shoot it. Spend your time on something else, you know. So that's, you are constantly, there was a process of, we were supposed to shoot 34 days. And I think 2 weeks before we were told actually it's only 30. So you have to rejig the schedule.
Right.
And I'm like, don't ask, well, how do you make, we can't shoot those four scenes. We can only shoot two. So how do you get the information? And so it's a lot of that goes on, you know, and that's just...
And would it be quite, you know, you're in the middle of shooting and the decision is made, you know, actually we need an extra little bit of dialogue to explain this here. You've got half an hour.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Is it that quick?
There was elements like that, or there was kind of like, you know, we had this sort of big setup, or the location didn't work out, or, you know, there's a couple of times, obviously we're trying to shoot and create a situation where you think there's a drought and it's heat and all that, but sometimes it was raining and you just can't.
Yeah.
So you have to react basically, and find new ways of working with certain scenes, and just you just hope that you know the material well enough that something will come out.
Yeah.
It's called winging it, basically. Yeah. But yeah, so that certainly happens. But that's just the process. The writing never stops. The writing continues in the edit, you know, you just have to accept that as a writer, that just then they take it away, and then
I suppose in the edit they can totally change
things do always change, and that was a kind of interesting process for me, because I've always kind of written and directed my own stuff, and I kind of trained as a director, and I'd kind of always been through the whole process on my own work, so you're controlling the material all the way through, so you're doing that. This is the first job I've ever done where I was the only other writer, and it's a very
strange,
sort of weird
to
experience to hand it over completely.
You watch and you go, this was supposed to be a comedy.
Yeah, exactly. It was total slapstick comedy. That's what we're looking for. It was supposed to be this kind of Laurel and Hardy thing.
Yeah.
Now, but yeah, you do have that moment of going, wow, that's that, or you see things totally different, and just, but that's the world of being a screenwriter. I think but that's why it's always, for me, you know, this is a stepping stone for me to making my own work anyway. That was always my ambition to write and direct
so
my own
on
stuff,
this. So you were there with your screenplay, and that you were focused on that was your one job. Like, you didn't have a say in other things or how things were working, or
And this one was very much that was the case, because you just knew. I mean, there's so many other, you know, you've got big finance, you've got producers, you've got Australian Screen, you've got all these things. And for me, I was brought on to do a screenwriting job, so
was that difficult for you though, as a director?
It's certainly trickier. It's certainly, you, I think if you're used to doing, having that control, then not having that control is, but I suppose it was part of the gig. I knew that when I signed up for this, I knew that it was going if the film got made, it was a massive opportunity for me, and it would only do me good. So I'm certainly not going to complain about those things. Yeah. You know, you just
got you onto the Headset podcast. So
yeah, exactly. All my dreams have come true. You know, so you know, you just
you're going to retire after this.
Yeah.
Done.
I was told I was going to get some sort of award, a trophy or medal or something.
You will get a cup. You get a Headstuff mug.
But yeah, so that was, you accept certain things, you know, you go, okay, this is that kind of job, but that it's an amazing experience. You're getting such value out of it. And for, you know, I'm only an upcoming director. So it's, you know, you're going to be working with great actors and watching them and you're going to learn so much. So it was a joy to be involved.
That's great actually, to be able to, just to be a part of it in from an outside perspective as well, looking and go, I like the way he does that, or
absolutely.
That person does that, you know.
Yeah, and you know, worked at, you know, PJ Dillon was a cinematographer working. I've known PJ for quite a while, but again, watching PJ work in a different way and this kind of thing was really interesting. And so you're always learning. That's the thing. You're always learning. And the more you work with, you know, better people, but the more experienced people and the more talented people, the more you get from it, you know. You just pick up so much. So, and it also instills in you that confidence that it's doable, that you can go, okay, they're not doing anything different than I don't know myself already, you know, in terms of my own training, as you've gone up and the stuff you've learned yourself, as you're just making stuff yourself. It's still the best way, is just learning by doing, you know.
And how, on I think the last short you did, was it? I Can't See You Anymore?
Yeah.
So you directed that, but you didn't write it?
Yeah.
So it's completely, kind of a flip. Totally different.
Yeah, it was an interesting flip. It was, again, something I'd never done before. I think, like, I'd made, like, Lowland Fell was my short before that. Mm. That was a short, because that done quite well. And I was primed up for making a feature at that stage. And it was like 2009, 2010. And then just a mixture of the crash and film board's budgets got really kind of cut. I probably didn't have the right project. So it just kind of, and you just want to keep, the worst thing that happens, especially for Irish directors, is that there's not a lot of opportunity in terms of continually making stuff. So you don't want to be going into making your first feature and you've got 4 weeks to do it or whatever amount of time. You're not going to have a lot of money.
Yeah.
So you're going to have not a lot of time. And then, you know, you spend your first week just remembering how to do this again, you know?
Yeah.
So for me, it was just like, okay, I got this up. A friend came with a script and thought, this might be your kind of thing, you might like it. So we went and I did it. And again, that's just keeping you, that muscle ticking over. So so hopefully that one, like, make my first feature, maybe hopefully end of this year or early next year, that, you know, you're not completely going, what the hell do I do again? You know, what's a clapperboard? What do I, you know? So that's all part of it, you know.
And so in that film, the guy comes out of a coma and there's the Anton Babinski syndrome. For me, it was something I never heard of. I don't know if that was the same for you.
Not until
you started working on it. The writer, did the writer like want to write a film and then find the syndrome and put it in, or heard about the syndrome and then wrote a script around
it? He had heard, I can't remember, it was a radio thing, Tom had heard it. And basically, he just thought this was a short. Shorts are kind of like that. They're very different from features in terms of how,
a lot more focused.
Yeah, I think a really good short is about one moment essentially. Yeah. You know, or one thing and it's, I Can't See You Anymore was just really interesting, weird psychological syndrome about blindness, and then you take that metaphor of a character who literally is blind to the consequence of his own actions, and you just thought, okay, there's something there that you can work on. And there's this propulsion of we were kind of going, okay, I wanted to make something that had a bit more, just a kind of tense experience.
Yeah.
That was just weirdly psychological, but also kind of had you going, what the hell is going on here? And had all these visual possibilities to mess with your head a little bit. So that was, it just seemed like a really, he kind of went, I think you like this.
Yeah.
This kind of in your frame of reference or whatever, this kind of.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
So that's how it kind of came out. And it just happened to be like, we were meeting about something else, like Jeannie Mandela, I've got this idea. And there was Signatures Award was just kind of come up the next week. So we literally put it together in a week really quickly. And it just all, so that's, I think that's what shorts kind of happened. They kind of, friends of mine arrived at myself, you know, it's either it comes in a dream or a flash of inspiration or something, and it just goes, that's it. And it's sort of almost fully formed, whereas a feature is just a lot more, obviously, you know, variables and craft and you need to know a lot more about structure and that sort of stuff to make it work.
How hard is it to shoot something like that? That's a very rare kind of syndrome. I mean, did you manage to meet somebody who
No.
It's hard to know how to direct the actor. The actor was really, what was that director's name? He was really good.
David.
Sorry for putting you on the spot there.
I'm not sure what David's surname is. Dave's surname, I'll have to come back to me on that one.
Yeah. But he's really good. But how do you like direct somebody to act with, you know, that kind of blindness, but not knowing he's blind kind of?
Yeah, well, I think it's just about for them. You know, you have to do the research with them and yeah, you're not going to, you know, we didn't have a chance to meet anybody. Yeah. It's such so rare in Ireland. I don't think there's anyone who's had it in a long time. So, but you do, it's about just, I suppose, not telling the audience what they have, you know, or what, so they're just playing. It's an interesting one because their belief system is that they aren't blind, so they're not playing blind, they're just playing normal. And then it's for you as a director to create visual clues and hints that there's something kind of not right in this situation. So that's kind of where that one came from. So it was about using interesting visuals and playing with that. We did a lot of things with these things, split diopters and stuff, which are special lenses and stuff that you just mess around with the image and stuff like that. So it's that kind of stuff is fun. And what you see and what you don't see, how, you know, you change background elements slightly, subtly as they go through. So they're constantly changing, but you're not even sort of, you're hoping the audience it gets this off-kilter feeling, but they're not really sure why.
Yeah,
so that escalates through it.
We should say spoiler alert for anyone who wants to watch this.
Yeah.
A bit late for that.
You can put it in the intro. It was quite interesting because you do notice the little things changing. Like when he hits the wall is really interesting. And then like the wife is just wearing different clothes and it's kind of like, oh, that's weird. Mm. But then when the doctor is a completely different person, it's like, you know, it's kind of really cool.
Yeah, and it's just tricky, you know, you're trying to make something that's quite, I suppose, high end in terms of visuals, but to do that in a short is just tricky because again, it's just, all that stuff is money and to do things like, you know, I wanted to do everything in camera as well. I'm not a massive fan of CGI stuff in terms of this, because you really want to create, I wanted to create this slight impression of fakeness anyway, so we did all old school rear projection sort of stuff for the car, and it was all kind of like Hitchcock did in Vertigo and stuff, you know, so I wanted to get that feeling of this guy was like a movie in his own head, so that's the kind of, it felt, I wanted to create this kind of real movie world, so all that sort of stuff, you're kind of doing things that like trompe l'oeil, trick the eye kind of stuff, you know, so it's like literally cardboard kind of cutouts, just all that, so just do it all on camera. I like that kind of traditional kind of approach anyway.
So you're working on a new project now. Do you think it's a great time for Irish film,
it is great. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's great for, I think it's particularly Lenny and John Crowley. Lenny has been such at the forefront now of he's sort of that bridging filmmaker between, you know, so the old guard and newer filmmakers come up, and I such respect for him. He's such a good guy, and his films are so, you know, he's such an identity as a filmmaker. And I think John Crowley's a brilliant, brilliant filmmaker as well. And I think I think it's fantastic that we're getting that profile and getting the international recognition. There's just great actors there, you know, and there is more talent out there. There's a lot of really, really great filmmakers out here. And you just, what I hope is that, you know, this kind of puts a spotlight on the industry, and that, so that, you know, the film board, when it has had its funding, it's doing this, but its funding absolutely slashed.
Yeah.
You know, 50% over the last few years. So that, you know, if you, I suppose what I'd love to see more of is the investment in the indigenous talent, because it is there.
Yeah.
It's there in actors, it is there in writers, it's there in directors. There's, and maybe less of a focus on the, let's have Ireland as a, you know, location. I think that's really important. And it's really important for crews, and it's really important for all. But, you know, what I think people really want to see out of Ireland is our own filmmakers, their own talent, writers and directors and cinematographers all doing really well internationally. And that can only be good for everybody. So hopefully if that investment now gets put back in, I think it's fantastic. It's not since, you know, early 90s that it's felt there's this kind of really kind of excitement about the industry. And I think the other major thing is getting that contract between the filmmakers and an Irish audience, getting that back. Because I think that might have been lost for a few years. There was a sense of, you know, maybe there was a lot of really interesting films being made, but maybe that weren't hitting an Irish audience in the way they could have or should have. And I think that's really exciting that maybe that Irish audience are kind of going like, all right, you know, there is.
Yeah,
I think it's really starting to shift now. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Would you like to work with Lenny, or are you ready now to have your own feature?
Well, for me, yeah, I think it's all guns blazing for my own sort of stuff. I'm working with a Danish director on a project I sort of already signed up for before the sitcom, and it's a kind of cool project set in Greenland in the turn of the 19th century.
We watched this on
The Spear. Yeah. So that's kind of cool. So hopefully that's going to go. I'm off to Greenland next week, so that was
cool.
It's gonna be exciting little weird trip.
Do you have a big jacket?
Yeah, I have. I bought some little ski gear there. It was on sale there.
you were complaining about the wind outside there a few minutes ago. So
I don't like the cold. But yeah, Lenny. I mean, if Lenny would want to work with me as a writer, I don't know. I mean, it's that element or co-producing that Purchase on the Spear. So. And I met him once when this was before this was coming out. Just asked him about a bit of advice about, you know, agents and all that sort of thing. And he's just such a good guy. He gives everyone his time. So yeah, I think what you want to do is have a network of support, and the filmmakers really kind of. I think the industry has always had that anyway. There is a kind of really good support network within it amongst filmmakers. We all try and help each other. So, but yeah, certainly like to have a success, you know.
Yeah. Oh, well, maybe. Have you always been in Ireland, like living in Ireland, or?
Yeah, well, I've.
Where was it you went to? Where did you study?
I studied in National Film Dublin School in London. So.
Oh, okay.
Well, I studied originally. I did English and Philosophy in Trinity.
Right.
Actually, I started off doing engineering for some strange reason. I dropped out, and ended up English Philosophy. Then I did a master's in film, UCD. Then I came out and started just trying to. You know, develop and trying to write shorts, and you know, with this idea of becoming a director and working whatever jobs you could find within the industry, you know, just assistant directing, assistant production. Then I ended up working with McDara Keller's, his dad actually, who ended up being the censor. So that's how I got to know Mac. And then finally I got selected for, into the director's program, the NFTS. So I went over to London, trained there, came back here. I was lucky enough to get a TG Carr. Program called Blood and Ink, Felix Duke, straight away before I even graduated. So I came back to do that, and I ended up getting a few more shorts off the ground. So it was sort of happening then between sort of 2007, 8, 9. I was making something. So I've been here basically just working on, and then the writing started taking off a bit more. And there's the weird thing about Ireland, I suppose, is that you do get to a stage where you've made a few shorts and there's not a lot of places to go then after that until you make your first feature. It's kind of that's the tricky period. Yeah. There's not a lot of TV being made. No, you know, other industries where there's a sort of natural step between being a student, making your shorts, then you might make some, you know, lower level TV. And it's quite hard here because there's so little drama made, and it tends to be single directors, or there's a few.
Low-level TV is so low.
Is that? Well, yeah, but like it is, it's just, you know, if you look at it in the last few years, you know, what's Love, Hate? It's one director. Yeah. You know, you're looking at, you either do Fair City or you kind of try and find it up from a different way of doing it. So the writing started taking off for me a bit, so that's...
Right.
How do you find that process, the writing process? Is it at all...
It's, listen, every time I wake up on a Monday morning and go... I don't have to go into an office or face a boss. I go, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
Then you go into the room and you're along with the bloody white page.
Facing a blank screen.
Computer, really, you know?
Do you sit in a room in wherever you're living at the time and say, right, I have to write between 11 and 2, you know?
For me, it's more like when I'm on a project, when I'm just on it full time, and I'll write every day depending on how I feel. Usually I'm kind of better in the mornings than the evenings. And I'll just continue on that for however many weeks it takes to finish it. And then I'll, depending on what else I'm doing, I'll be developing other stuff. And I do work with other people a lot. So I co-write a lot because it's just so much more fun and it's just so much easier to bounce. I work quite well out of bouncing ideas off people. I need that kind of dialogue to kind of get my ideas in some ways, or to clarify myself. And sometimes
Does that mean writing in different places? Do you always have to write in the same place? Or would you write and say, I'm going to go over to such and such a place and try and write a bit with, you know?
It depends. It generally, it's just I need to have my computer and a quiet room. I don't really need anything else. And some place nearby that's got good coffee, really. That's that's pretty much it. I don't like working in, it's just quietness. And that's why, you know, moved down to Baltimore where it's very quiet this time of year. So I think it's a fishing village of probably 150 people. So
nice.
But it gets jammers in the summertime, so it's great. But yeah, I think your process is very much just about what you're working on at that particular time and the needs that has. Mm. And then I'm pretty much totally preoccupied with that. So I'll work whatever hours of the day it needs until I finish. I know lots of other people are much more kind of 9 to 5 and, but I think it depends. Like, I don't have kids, so I think that changes that, you know, because I think once you have those kind of responsibilities, it changes things quite a lot, you know, so I can have a little bit more of my own time.
Yeah. Just interesting, the process of it, like, you know, to kind of how to actually get an idea from your head onto the page. Everyone seems to be
it's very different. I think it's, you know, it's just, a lot of it, to be honest, is, I think with screenwriting particularly, because it's not essentially linguistic and about linguistic flow and stream of consciousness flow. It's not about, it's much more about, you know, obviously thinking visually and structure, and there's a quite logical element to it.
Yeah.
And it's also quite a problem solving kind of thing. Sometimes it's just about going through options and options and options in your head going, what about this? What about this? What if this happened? What if this? To solve the kind of, each kind of section of the script has a new obstacle kind of to get over.
Yeah.
And you know, that's things you're looking, hopefully you have a character, you know what they want and you know what they're trying to achieve. And so then you're trying to just kind of work through those kind of elements. Mm. So sometimes it is a case of just banging your head off a wall enough times to get through the wall.
So do you plot first and then fill in?
Generally, I'm very much a planner. I plan treatments quite detailed, but, and I think you have to have a sense of, you have to have a very clear sense of what the identity of the film is.
Right.
You know, genre, all that sort of stuff, but there's almost like a feel to it. So I plan it, but in the same sense, then it things will always change in the writing and you'll explore more. It's just about scraping off the layers then and getting deeper and deeper into material, into the characters, and they start coming out more. But generally speaking, depends on what it is, but most of my stuff has quite a strong, I'd say, strong story basis, so that you need to have that figured out, where the direction is, where it's ending, how it's ending, all that stuff before you start writing, because it's just not going to work that way otherwise. But you want to keep yourself open to change as well. I don't think, I wouldn't be so, you know, schematic.
It's
like jazz.
And on We Watched the Sun Disappear.
Yeah.
Did you write that?
So yeah, I wrote that.
And you're directing?
No, it's a Danish director called Jonas Arnby. So I got approached. They really liked Strangeland script. They had this, they'd heard, it's very, they had an idea about a, the producer had an idea about it's based on a true story about these Danish explorers. Two of them had ended up getting lost out in Greenland in 1908, and having spent the whole, so Arctic winter, polar night, 4 months of night together. Now they spent 3 years together lost out in the Arctic and they survived. So that was they wanted to do something in this. So they came to me, and then, so I've gone quite far away from that, but so it's more about these, it's a psychological thriller about these two, an Arctic explorer and his doorway who go on a rescue mission. And the rescue mission goes awry, and they end up spending just the one winter together in a kind of trying to survive this winter, but also going slightly mad together. And so it's quite psychological, quite dark.
Yeah.
Has an element of, you can see, I haven't actually got to see The Revenant yet, but I see, looking at the trailer, there's an element of that kind of, it's about what you know, there's an element of your biggest fear is what is out there when you're surrounded by darkness.
Uh-huh.
And what also the fellow you're relying on is capable of. So it's quite an intense sort of psychological thriller.
Liam Neeson versus Wolves.
Liam Neeson versus Wolves.
I never actually saw that.
Yeah. It's not a bad movie, actually. The Grey.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not.
I heard it was the better of his latest efforts.
Yeah, I'm not going to knock Liam Neeson. He's a ledge.
Yeah, he's a legend. Yeah.
weirdest.
Just made the same
weirdest
film.
Weirdest action hero. It's so strange. But, yeah, so that's that.
And then after that, you want to direct a feature?
I've got my own feature called No More Shall We Part, which is...
Sorry, what's it called?
No More Shall We Part. Oh. So it's kind of it's a Nick Cave, stolen Nick Cave lyric. It's about a kind of wealthy-to-do businesswoman who's grieving over her son, who gets a kind of... She gets exploited by a young couple, and it's about the sort of twisted revenge she takes on this young couple. So it's kind of her and her husband and this young couple, sort of intergenerational conflict. Bit of a weird Oedipal vertigo drama.
Oh, right.
So it's kind of, that's that. And then I've got a 1916 movie that's finished that I co-wrote with a guy called Jamie Hannigan.
Oh, yeah.
Who wrote Pilgrimage, that's coming out soon.
I saw that on your list of stuff. So it's out this year?
No, we're hoping to get it shot. It's just, it's quite expensive. But it's great. It's a frustrating one because it's, everyone who reads it goes, this is an amazing script. It's a really good, interesting way of, well, it's hard for me to say, but I suppose I would put it, it's like, we look, it's a bit like Chinatown meets like an old film noir made by Peckinpah, set against the Easter Rising.
Okay.
So it's quite pulpy. It's like
Raymond
Chandler. It's like a Raymond Chandler movie, like a labyrinthine plot, but made by it's called Come On, We Kill Them All. It's really kind of pulpy and fun. And
sounds great.
Everyone who reads it goes, I'd love to see this made. It's amazing, but it's going to cost about 25 million or something. And so it just...
Do we have 25 million lying around?
We'll get back to you on that.
Please do.
Because it does sound great.
Yeah. No, it's a cool movie. So, yeah, hopefully. We're hoping in the next few months we're gonna see some real kind of movement on that.
Cool.
So that's that. Yeah, so they're the three main projects at the moment that are
great
taking over. So hopefully we'll see some of those in the next
we'll keep
12 months to 18 months.
We'll keep an eye on you.
Please do.
In the website.
Please not.
We'll keep writing about everything.
Yeah. Don't arrive at my door anytime soon, though. Come on. Let's bring that mug. I want a mug.
Yes. The mug's yours.
Okay, great.
Anyway, it's been great talking to you.
Thanks very much.
Cheers.
So that was episode 31 of the Head Stuff podcast with Michael Kinnarns. I hope you enjoyed that. I'm still here on the phone with Connor.
Hello, Alan.
Hello. We're in different parts of the world.
Well, we're about half an hour away from each other, but...
Yeah, but we just couldn't make it work, could we?
We couldn't.
So that was Michael Kinnarns. Had a great time talking to him.
Maybe if your office was nicer, I'd make an effort to go up.
Well, I'm not in your office either, Connor.
I know, this sounds awful. It sounds like I'm actually generally not making an effort to go up there and record this, but it's almost more
Connor's
of an effort to do this.
Yeah, well... Yeah, we've spent more than an hour trying to organise this, which would have been the trip up and the trip back.
Yeah.
But Connor's been very busy. He's been working on a load of shows.
I'll leave me alone.
And he doesn't love me anymore.
I just think to make things work, you need to spend time apart. It's like it's not you, it's me type of thing.
Yeah, that's what you keep telling me. You and all my ex-girlfriends keep telling me. Yep. Yeah. If you enjoyed that, then subscribe to us if you don't already and rate us on iTunes or SoundCloud or whatever it is. You can go to headstuff.org/podcasts and you'll see all the buttons to subscribe and listen to all our other ones. You can also join the Headstuff Podcast Network group on Facebook by just typing that into Facebook and just click join. And you can follow us on Twitter. So thanks to Connor for doing the sound and for seeing if this phone call thing works.
It might or it might not. There might be.
Yeah.
This might turn into a very short intro and outro.
Yeah.
Hello, goodbye.
Well, listen to this, bye. Thanks to Video Blue for the theme tune and Mikey for the artwork. Thanks to Glenn Hogarty for setting up the interview for us. And... to Michael Kinnarns for being part of it. Go and see Strangerland if you haven't seen it yet. And that's probably enough for this week. What do you think?
Maybe. Think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a new episode of Fascinated podcast up as well, which is brilliant. So listen to that. And we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.